All right, y'all, it's spring, and you know what that means. It's time to start planning our summer festival traveling. Yep, it's time to get into my Airbnb bag cross-country, a.k.a. Time to visit my homes all across the country. And you know what I never think about? Why not list my own spot on Airbnb and host some folks at my house? I mean, my house is cute. Yes, let's make money while we're spending money. Just trying to help you out, man, because your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. This classic episode was produced by the team at Pandora.
Yo, 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 what up? This is Fontigolo with this week's QLS Classic. This week, we go back to June 27, 2018 with our guest Tessa Thompson. Best known for her work in Sorry to Bother You and Creed, Tessa held court about falling into acting, social activism, tater salad, Philly cheesesteaks, and goat love. I don't know what goat love is. That sounds very Caucasian. I'm going to have to check it out and find out what that is. But anyway, this is QLS episode number 90. Enjoy, y'all. Peace.
On
you
shit.
Better deliver it.
I'm too
Tessa
sleepy
Thompson.
To be writing it right
no
now.
No excuses. Let's do it.
Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
Tristan Thompson needs raincoats.
Yeah.
Kenan Thompson's got jokes.
Yeah.
Amir Thompson's a showboat.
Yeah.
Tessa Thompson's a go.
Roll call. Okay. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
Okay.
Suprema, Suprema roll call.
My name is Sugar.
Yeah.
I was high on weed.
Yeah.
When I recorded The Seed.
Yeah.
And when I saw Creed.
Roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
Dear white people.
Yeah.
Please use seasoning.
Yeah.
Sincerely yours.
Yeah.
Boss Bill.
Roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
It's La E.
Yeah.
Now y'all know I'm excited.
Yeah.
Tessa Thompson.
Yeah.
All my sisters invited.
Roll call. Hey. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
My name is
my
Tessa.
Mind?
Yeah. What'd you do?
Oh, Steve.
Really, Steve?
Steve.
You're such an asshole.
Roll call.
Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Really?
She seems stuck.
Steve's an asshole.
Yes.
Suprema.
Suprema's asshole.
Suprema.
My
really?
God. You're an asshole.
It's ruined.
Dear White Steve.
I was trying to help.
It's ruined.
Dear White Steve. Go ahead, Tessa.
Dear White Steve, can I have the microphone, please?
Thank you.
I'm reclaiming my time, my intro.
We can punch in.
No, we can't. That's, we don't
no,
do that.
No. You can't that's, punch in inspiration.
You can punch him in the face.
She owe you like three more dear white peoples, and then we y'all even.
Oh, wait. Who made the rule up that we can't have a do-over?
You.
Oh, yeah, you did.
Well, then it kind of loses the spontaneity if we
yeah.
do it again.
You want to hear it, though, right? That's
what I don't
mean, I was curious to see how fast you, because the thing is, whoever, my determination on how good the interview is going to go.
No,
is based on how fast you are on your feet with the roll call. Like Leon Silver is not answering questions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was like, oh, this is going to be a hard interview. Actually, it wasn't, but, you know, I'm just saying, man.
Yeah, but now you can't. We can't do do-over now that you even applied more pressure onto what it was going to be. It was going to be this spontaneous
I fucked him
thing.
Suprema.
No, this is fucked up.
No,
my name is Tessa.
Yeah.
I live in the moment.
Yeah.
I'm here to say,
yeah,
whatever I'm gonna. Yeah.
We got it.
See?
Ciao.
Yeah, no, not see, Steve. Never, ever interrupt a guest.
Bad, bad, yeah.
Anyway. Steve, but what were you, what, that was on accident or what happened, Steve?
Well, you hesitated and I thought you were frozen.
Oh,
so
no.
I tried to give you the first line.
Oh, okay.
That's he was all. Trying to mansplain
your roll call.
I thought it was like line.
You know. No, definitely not.
But never in the history
okay,
of
Okay, our listeners are confused. Yeah. Okay, because Steve done threw us off. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Questlove Supreme, an alternative reality. This is Questlove, and with Team Supreme, Boss Bill, It's Laia, Sugar Steve, shout out to Fontigolo and his countertop, and Unpaid Bill somewhere on Sesame Street. But we're strong today. Our guest today is the star of stage and the small and big screen. Her credits include Creed from the Rocky franchise, Dear Right People, Selma, Dear Right People.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
You want to try that again?
No.
Do-over?
You want to do-over? Punch that, you punch
no,
that in?
There's no do-over. No. Selma, Annihilation, Thor, For Colored Girls. And this summer she stars as Detroit in the critically acclaimed, already so much acclaim about this film, it's not even coming out until July, and the critically acclaimed Boots Riley directorial debut,
yes.
And the science surrealist comedy, Sorry to Bother You. She's also been present behind the camera as well as part of the Time's Up movement, slowly helping to redirect the course for women and people of color to greener pastures. And speaking of pastures, rumor has it that she's also a goat. Mm. We would like to welcome the world's finest goat.
Enthusiast?
Yes. Tessa Thompson.
Hey.
Wait, I gotta ask. How did that whole Tessa the goat thing come up?
Tessa is goat. So yeah, that's a Twitter handle. I expressed that I liked goats, I guess, on some public platform.
I really wish Zara was here now.
And somebody started taking photographs of me and putting them next to photographs of goats that are dressed like I'm dressed or posed like I'm posed. And it's pretty impressive.
It's kind of scary, though. Go,
it's
go
a little,
to Tessa as a goat. Because the yellow dress one.
I mean, it's dead
they,
on
I
sometimes.
I think they made the outfit and then put the goat in that yellow dress and had it in the same facial expression.
Right, and
you.
Then there's some people, some conspiracy theorists or some people that don't believe in just good things that think that I'm behind this account. And I just want to say that I'm not, I have nothing to do with
it. I know you're not. Okay, that's the one thing in stalking you.
You got like 2,000 followers.
Yeah, I went through every comment, everything, and I was like, okay, this is not her.
It's not me.
I understand.
I wish it was. I wish I was that.
You drink goat's milk and eat goat milk?
I don't. I'm not into goat products. Okay. I'm just into goats.
I got it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Save them.
I see. I really wish that.
I'm sorry.
Zara was here, right? Oh, you're on the account
yeah,
right now?
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, you see the yellow dress?
It's great, right?
Wait. Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah. It's like, that's the point where I was like, wait a minute, Tessa.
And then, no. And then some people were tweeting like, at Tessa Thompson is such a good sport. Like, there's this idea that I also look like a goat, and I'm embracing the fact. But I'm cool with that, like, too. Like, my eyes are wide set apart. Like, it's fine.
That's funny.
Okay, let's start the interview. Okay. Stop. I just wanted to know about the account. Yeah, welcome to the show. I guess today you're doing, like, a bunch of press junkets and things. Because
mm-hmm.
mm-hmm, you're immaculately dressed.
Yeah.
And all the years I've known you, I was like, wow, I've never seen
this
you.
This is the bet you sit, you're saying
I've
now.
I've never seen you look like you do when you're on television.
Well dressed.
I've never, no, I mean, you know, I've never seen you look like you look on TV. So
that's what I said. She looks press junket chic today.
Yeah.
She got some shit to do.
Yeah, some people help me.
Who's your stylist?
These guys named Micah and Wayman. They're dope. They're friends. They like, we're competitors, sort of. And then they were like, let's just work together.
How does a starlet find the perfect stylist? I always wondered about. I mean, that's what you are now, right?
They actually kind of stalked me. They asked if I wasn't working with anyone. See, this is what you're talking about. I didn't have my my proverbial clothing shit one. Together. No, no, I was just like, too. I would just show up like, shoes. I'll just wear this. And then so they were they like, dress you need help. For, not for my life, but they dressed me for when I appear in public spaces.
So they dressed you?
I meant for the Met
yeah.
Gala.
Yeah, they dressed me for the Met Gala.
Yeah. Okay.
And Tom Brown, they made that dress for me.
How does, okay, I was going to say, how does that work? Like, does a designer...
I think
come it, to you first. Like, what is the protocol for? Because the Met Gala is such a cool kids thing. Only club mm-hmm. that the rest of the world kind of watches like through the window. Like, oh, what's going? But how does one? Do you
and
have
also,
to know?
There
in
are
a
like
winter,
there
or?
Are like tiers of coolness even there. Like you're at least for me. I
so
was
when
there
you were
and I'm
there,
just, like
you
watching
just
the cool
like,
kids.
Okay,
a little
like
bit.
You got Rihanna
but
on one
I was
level
there.
And Jaden Smith on another.
Yeah, because even I reposted the picture. I think Lena Waithe posted the picture. Of y'all whole crew. And it's funny because I reposted a picture. It was you, it was Janelle, it was Lena, it was, I'm about to say Black Panther and his sister. It was Chad, it was Letitia. It was a beautiful crowd of people. And I put under the picture, I was like, you know, this is this photo that the press won't send out, but this is the one that you wanted to be.
Yeah, the black excellence photo.
I know. Well, I think it might have been, I mean, this is my first year, but it seems like it's probably the blackest Met that there has ever been. And how that picture happened is there were a couple of us just already in the hallway. And we were like, someone started taking a picture of us, and we're like, we want this picture. So everyone black after dinner meet in the hallway, and then it got just like loud and fun. And then Frances McDormand came, and then she realized everyone was black, so she was like, maybe I should leave. And then Lena Waithe was like, no, you're an ally. Like, get in, sis. You're cool. But it was it was a young black and gifted experience. It was cool because you're right in the sense of like. From the rest of the world's perception, there's this thing of like, it's the cool kids. It feels like it's also just like who's in the zeitgeist at that moment and who's in the cultural conversation. And so it felt good to look around at that hallway and be like, folks that are in the conversation and like moving and shaking are all these really rad black people of color. But like,
based on what I saw on Instagram, you guys, even though y'all would sort of be the perceived outcast, i.e. not the Kardashians, Rihanna, not J-Lo, and you know, like the typical
thing.
Blake Lively or whatever, but y'all seem way cooler, and based on, you know, the comments, like, that seemed like the coolest Met Gala ball. Someone put up, like, the first year compared to last year, and it was just like, it was no comparison that it was like that, but... anyway.
Yeah, I guess it's a good time.
All right. So where were you born?
Los Angeles.
Okay. What part?
Hollywood. Well, Glendale technically was where I lived when I was little, and then Hollywood, and then moved to the West Side to get to a better school district.
Glendale with the world famous roller skating rink.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the... What's
the World on Wheels.
Every Hollywood roll bounce, like any time that you've seen... roller skating in a video or in Hollywood.
It happens at that place.
Faith Evans video.
I was just about to say Faith Evans, yeah.
Disorderlies?
Roll Bounce? With
Donnie Simpson.
Seriously, Roll Bounce was done there. Disorderlies
with Donnie Simpson as the roller skating DJ?
I don't know, but yes. I'm.
True story, I crashed Snoop Dogg's birthday party there once.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Was Long. Not an invited guest.
And you got in.
Did you know that it was happening?
What? Yeah, I heard it was happening. And I was in another bar with my friend Shelby, and I was like, let's go. We're just going to shoot
me
our
how
shot
you did
and
it.
Get in there.
You seem like the type of person that knows that if you do something with confidence,
it just
you
happens.
You get away with
well,
murder.
I also had, this is the thing, I was like 17 or, yeah, 17, or I was not 21 yet, and I had a fake ID, and I was out in Hollywood.
The death row years. Dangerous Snoop years.
Exactly.
Not Uncle Snoop years.
Okay, listen. So I was walking with two girlfriends of mine, and Snoop Dogg was going in the back door of a Hollywood club, and he had like 26 people with him. And he was like, yo, and told us to come. And I was like, it's Snoop. Like, we got to go. And we didn't go because we were like, do we go? Do we not go? So I was like, it's happening now. I'm going to go to your party. I want him.
How?
I didn't really meet him. I just like
how
rolled
was the
around.
Party, though?
It was really fun.
But that's your first.
Why you look
like...
scared of me?
Because like death row era Snoop is way different.
You said she didn't go.
No, but he's now. No, I didn't go then.
The first time
I went to his birthday party, and I think that was like he was Snoop Lion then, so we're fine.
Oh yeah, Snoop Lion is
yeah.
Oh, that's kindler, gentler Snoop.
Right.
Yeah, kindler.
Wait, how long has he been Snoop Lion?
That was like for
he's not
a year.
Anymore. So.
Oh, well, okay.
He was so maybe Snoop Lion like what 2007?
No, it was like 2012, I think.
Oh,
it don't matter. He grandpop Snoop now. So.
Yeah. So in Glendale, I'm gonna try and act like I don't know your history already, okay, but cool. For our listeners,
yeah, because I don't know shit.
Tell
please.
Me,
yeah, I don't know anything.
Yeah, I'm still mind blown that your father's chocolate genius.
Yeah.
How's he doing, by the way?
He's really good.
Okay.
Yeah, so he's really good. He moved to New York when my folks weren't together. He moved to New York when I was like 7 or 8. And so I would come here all the time.
Bi-coastal.
He came here. Yeah, it was bi-coastal. So he came here for a while because he just signed a record deal and he was like supposed to be here for music. And then he just fell in love with the city and eventually fell in love and had my little brother and my little sister. So I grew up between here and Brooklyn. My folks were in Fort Greene for like 15 years.
Your father being Mark Anthony Thompson. Chocolate genius.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was going to say, tell me something about his music. Like, how would people remember Chocolate Genius to be?
He was part of a black renaissance, like, in the early aughts.
Mm, okay. Yeah, and I think made work, like, he has one record called Black Music. And, I mean, he's sort of a musician that's hard to categorize. And I think so often, particularly for, like, black musicians, they want to box you into this space like you're an R&B artist, and that maybe isn't you. So he kind of wanted to talk about that.
He likened him to like a early Martin Luther, Cody Chestnut, well, somebody who is kind of like out the box.
In the early aughts, there was Saul Williams, Martin Luther, Cody Chestnut,
right.
Chocolate Genius. At some point, I mean, even, I guess Rahsaan was sort of...
Rahsaan Patterson?
He was still making stuff in the late 90s, early aughts. So he was in that circle. I mean, it wasn't an official circle, but sort of like the alternative black. Like there was left to center black of neo soul. And then there was even the left to center to that.
So what is that like being growing up being the daughter of a left artist?
Like, did you guys ever listen to Lightspeed Champion, who was before Blood Orange.
Mm-hmm.
My dad like sort of occupied that space before other people were occupying that space in terms of not just like sonically the sound, but also Chocolate Genius was this creation. So
your dad was a pioneer in ways.
Yeah, kind of, I think. I don't know. I think that. He would say something different probably. But I don't know. It was cool because it meant like being in New York, I was... You know, like, especially Fort Greene at that time. I mean, it's still cool, but it just felt so rich. It was before sort of like...
Before gentrification.
So, you know, we'd be outside on our stoop and like Mos Def would walk by or like Rosie Perez or, you know, Spike Lee or it just... And I would go, you know, with my dad to the Public Theater and like... see plays, and it just, you know, I was like 16 at the time, so it just felt like, well, I want to be a part of this world of people making things. And
such a difference in the culture from Glendale to Fort Greene, right?
Yeah, wildly so.
So at the time when you're witnessing this, were you yourself thinking about a career in music or anywhere in the arts? Like, what was your talent as a kid or a teenager?
I always acted in school, but I didn't think about it as a career. I always thought that I would like be a teacher or be a lawyer or go into politics. I don't know. I felt like I wanted to make a contribution in some way. And maybe because of my proximity to being around artists, I just felt like, I don't know. Is this possible for me? Is this something that I could do or will do?
So what was the moment that you had the inspiration, like, okay, this is what I'm going to do?
I think it was just, like, at a time where I realized it was such a compulsion that it was, like, such a thorn in my side that it wasn't going to let me go. And at that point, like, I didn't go to college. Like, I dropped out. You know what I mean? Like, there was nothing else I was qualified to do. I was, like...
Where did you go to college?
Well, I went to community college, and then I was supposed to transfer to Berkeley, and I, like... just decided not to and took a semester off and started taking classes. And I was performing so much. I was doing theater in LA. It just was all I really cared about. It was the only thing I cared about that the idea of like being bad at it felt crippling to me. Everything else I could sort of dabble in and not be that good at and move on.
Wow, that's crazy. Like, because as productive and as busy as you are right now, mm-hmm. I would have thought like this took meticulous planning, and you had vision boards, and when you repeat mantras and, you know, put post-it notes, 100 million records, more than Thriller. Like, but you're just like, it was a thorn in my side. I decided to.
Well, maybe I'm underselling it. No, I didn't have vision boards, but I think the other thing too, just like, truthfully, I felt like there's just more interesting work to do now if you look like me. When I first started, that wasn't necessarily the case. So I think not that I had ambivalence towards it, but there was a part of me that was like, is this sustainable? Like,
can you make a living?
Can I make a living at this? And also, is this going to be able to captivate me and like hold my interest? And so, yeah, I think there has been an evolution.
I was going to say that maybe around the time when Thor came along, that I realized, because I'm not going to front like I'm a Marvel head.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen a couple Marvel films, but in my head, I don't know the history of, I can't pronounce her name.
Valkyrie.
Yes. I don't know the history of her, but I would imagine that maybe initially that role was Witten. What's wrong with my R's?
Oh. No.
My R's, man. I'll just be a rabbit. That role was Witten for...
Elmer Fudd.
Yeah, it was written for, I would imagine, for a white character.
It was written for a white lady, big white lady. She's a big white lady,
and they wasn't happy about this black lady.
Whoa, Carl.
Anyway, no, but the fact that all of your roles, you seem to masterfully. Steer your career in a place where it's not typical at all, especially for black act. Like, I know worthy black actresses. Yes, I know worthy black actresses that, because roles are far and few between, they might have to compromise some shit and do, you know, where's the potato salad part three? You know, straight to DVD or just something to.
Yeah, it's a real movie.
No, it's not.
Where's Son. Potato Salad? Yes.
No, it's not.
Yes,
part
it is.
Three.
Well, you guys are being for real.
Part three, I don't know.
There's a sequel. There's
Where's the Potato one. Salad is a real film?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's actually really one hilarious scene in the
dude,
film.
Dude, where's the
Wait, you watched
salad.
It?
Yeah, I watched it.
And what year was that made?
I don't know, but Jaleel White is in it. Yeah.
Hey, man.
Trust me. When the interview's over, I will show you the most funny thing you've ever seen.
He's fine.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Is it funny, like... Bad the scene, funny, the scene I'm like show girls
you,
funny.
The scene I'm going to show you is fucking hilarious, like genuinely hilarious.
Is it on Netflix?
All right,
I think I rented it from Netflix. I mean, when they were still sending out DVDs.
I want to see it.
Wait, slight rabbit hole. All right,
but also, are you? But P.S. On... But P.S. Why can't we have it? Why is that a problem?
It's like, not a problem.
I love Dude, Where's My Car?
Yeah,
you have a point. We're trying.
Do you know what I mean? It's just that we don't have enough.
No.
We don't have enough.
But there's
right?
No balance.
We don't have enough content. We don't have enough representation.
As far as I'm concerned, there's not enough
Amir
of those
Amir said
films.
The world. Nah. The word,
there's
though,
no balance.
Balance.
There can be Dudes Where's My Car, but then there's Mississippi Burning and all this other stuff. But usually
I think in when it comes to black films, I think we have too many serious films and not enough.
No, we have earnest films. Like common.
Okay, earnest films.
But y'all forget that we're still, that's
but
rude.
But we don't have a lot of.
Wherever you were going with that is rude, sir.
No, that's my boy. Common knows. I call him Ernest. Ernest goes to camp.
But what I'm saying is we don't have enough like silly comedies aimed towards younger kids, you know, the teenagers. There's not really that many of those.
Right now,
yeah.
There used to be, though.
There used
like,
to be, yeah.
I don't know.
But like, I think Nick Cannon's probably filling that. Like, his production can up come.
As far
I think,
as the funny.
For, as far as funny stuff.
Yeah.
Like, silly, dude, where's
yeah,
my car
they got
for
dope,
black kids?
And that's not funny.
Dope?
Mm-hmm. Dope.
Yeah,
wasn't
I wasn't too.
No.
I like dope. That was dope, but it wasn't funny.
You didn't like dope? Nah. Why?
I was mad at the... Well, it's going to sound really, really anal. the band scenes. I hated the band scenes because the music didn't match the band.
But yeah, band scenes are always tough in movies.
Well, no.
We're the two that looks at the fingering.
It's the fact you've got Pharrell's tinny drums and plinky sounds, and you've got people with actual guitars and keyboards sitting there. I couldn't watch it. I'm sorry.
Did you miss the plot? What about the plot and the acting?
It was too distracting. It was too distracting for me.
I hear you.
Damn. Sorry.
It's funny. We have the same outlook, but I was willing to let it go. I knew from the gate that, okay.
Did you do a Twitter? I like when you do rants about things, like Instagram or Twitter rants. Did you do any rants?
No, I didn't.
About dope?
About
plucky sounds. And
I do those.
You weren't like...
I believe your film...
This is a widowing hack wit.
Will you stop?
I don't understand.
Gina Rodriguez is about to lose her invite to the picnic. She'll be the new ghost host.
Where's the potato salad?
Yeah, but that's a real film, Steve. Also, the Roscoe's Chicken and Waffle comedy is also a real film.
Well, Roscoe's is a real film. Roscoe... That's Go Back Home or whatever. That's the Martin joint with.
No, there's a Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles. No. All right.
See, this, all you have to do.
You live in LA.
As soon as I'm going to go home, if Where's the Potato Salad on Netflix, I will watch 5 seconds of it. So then my whole feed is like, because you liked, you know what I mean? Yeah. And that's when you get all the deep cuts. All the deep cuts. You're like, this is a film? Like,
wait.
Explain it. Go ahead, Tessa. Go ahead, Phil.
Cape
for white potatoes.
No, that's not what I'm saying. Have you ever had Japanese potato salad?
First of all, what? Who told them to do that?
Okay.
Why can't they do that?
Yes, they do that.
I didn't know
that. They do that. Have you had it?
No, I haven't, but it sounds delicious.
I've had Chinese potato salad.
Delicious. It's like eating a cloud. Like, it's very mashed. It's really good. I'm sorry. It's good.
Where do you find this?
I don't know.
In Japan,
but also like sometimes
potatoes in Japan.
Huh?
There's no potatoes in Japan.
Words of wisdom. Time to get some from Sugar Steve.
Steve.
How do you know this, Steve?
There's mansplain,
no,
white-splain.
There's no cheese either.
No cheese, really?
But the Japanese love cheese.
No.
They love mayo, too.
Where's your source of information for this, Steve?
From eating in Japanese restaurants.
Okay. Wait a minute.
Some people have been in Japan.
This is about to be the most ignorant. All right, I'm taking my show back. No.
Yeah, that rabbit hole is going to get real.
Because Smollett's ruined that. No, I'm taking my show back.
So can I just say one thing? So what you're saying is you prefer,
I did not
for
say,
the record, you prefer the Japanese potato salad over the yellow?
No, okay. I didn't say that. I just said that I don't think the potato salad always has to be yellow. I don't want fruit in my potato salad.
But if you're coming to the cookout.
But American potato salad should be yellow. How about that? Can we agree on that? American?
That's fine.
Yeah, okay.
Now y'all got me thinking.
No raisins.
No raisins.
No raisins. But also, I don't mind like a different kind of mustard sometimes. Like a whole grain, like
you
a...
Can, oh, that's nothing wrong. You can mess around with the mustard. As long as it's yellow.
Well, but like
you can play with the mustard.
Yes, I agree with you, Bill Lyon.
Y'all can't see what he's doing, but...
I don't want to get my black card revoked.
Don't get your black card revoked.
Ain't no place, child.
That's the hell they invested, so she can let her go with that one. We give her that one, because you in it.
We fell down an incredible rabbit hole here.
We did.
Yo, what's up? This is Fontigolo from Team Supreme. Black representation in media is very important to me. I think it's important to have our stories told by people who look like us and who have shared in our common experiences. Some of my earliest influences were Donnie Simpson. I would also say Tom Joyner, Angela Stribling, Sherry Carter. They were just people who told our stories with a lot of class and dignity and were big inspirations to me. The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black Stories, Black Truths.
Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcast, The Center Black Voices. It's NPR Noir. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? Well, no, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
How are you able to navigate and stay active in a town that doesn't cater to you, structurally to you? And
I think maybe I have my dad to thank for that in a sense, because I feel like I got to see my dad be an artist, do his thing that felt really singular, and not make concessions. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it meant that we were eating really good and stuff was great and we were shopping. What color do you want it in? Like, I don't got to choose both. And sometimes that wasn't the case, you know? And so, yeah, sometimes you make money and sometimes you don't, because you just aren't going to do certain things.
But will we ever see you in a Tyler Perry or Will Packer movie?
I've been in a Tyler Perry
movie. Wait,
which one? For Color Girls.
For Color Girls,
right,
yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. You're cheating, because
why?
I mean, really, you were in For Color Girls, and who could say no to the movie version of For Color Girls,
exactly.
No matter who did it?
Mm. Yeah.
And I'm gonna say, like I said to Miss Felicia,
if Woody Allen did it.
Miss Debbie Allen would have done it.
I said Woody Allen.
I said Debbie. Oh, okay.
You said if anybody
directed
it.
Wished that,
if anybody directed
it, I just always wished that.
So I got to throw a monkey wrench right in there. So.
Yeah.
I wish, you know, Nsingha Stewart had directed it, like,
so
she was initially supposed to do.
I know, and it's, her treatment sounded so beautiful.
It was the it would have propelled her past, or at least equal to Ava levels right now.
Yeah. Mm. It's a, yeah.
But oh, man.
She.
Yeah. But you know what? I truly believe if the film were being made today, she would be the choice.
Yeah.
And this is no shade to Tyler. It's like they wanted to get that movie made.
That's crazy when you think about it in retrospect, because at the very least, I mean, not that we put her in the least, but Ava would have been the director of that movie. Ava or Nsingha. I'm just saying, like, today in popularity and in sense of female empowerment.
Yeah,
and
also the cultural conversation, which is like, for us, by us, we want to be able to tell our own stories. If it's it's not that men can't be involved in telling our story, but like, if it's a female centric film, like, yo, let a woman tell it.
And they couldn't even give it to Debbie Allen. That just makes me, man, your sister's
has
right
there.
She
done a movie before?
Yeah, she did. Amistad.
She did?
Yeah.
Give Us Free.
Yeah. How did I not know that?
Yeah. No, she was a part of Amistad.
Or like Cassie Lemons.
I know she's done lots of television.
Cassie Lemons.
Yeah.
Have I been pronouncing her name wrong this whole time? Damn, wait. Say it for the culture for us. Please, Tessa, how you pronounce her name?
Well, now I'm nervous that I'm pronouncing it wrong.
Well, you gave me the
Cassie
fancy.
It's Cassie.
Oh, I was calling her Casey, so you're right.
It's Cassie Lemons. Okay. Question. My dad once told me that it's not Sade, it's Sade.
Yeah.
That's true.
In Nigeria, I think it's Sade.
No one knows that, though.
Well, the funny thing is, like, on
album
titles,
her album titles pronounced Sade.
Yeah, they pronounce Sade.
Yeah. Well, then why does everyone say Sade?
Because it feels fancy.
And also, did you guys see that I was trying to do a...
Yes, yeah. I see you channeling.
The four of us can see it. Now we gotta physically describe what you're wearing.
No, we're about to take pictures. Pictures.
We'll take pictures.
We'll take pictures, yes. Oh my God, this is like,
this is crazy.
Wayne's World meets. Let's just throw everything out there. What did you have for breakfast this morning?
Potato salad.
No.
With whole grains.
No, mustard. I had I'm embarrassed.
Don't be embarrassed. You're from Cali.
I know. Okay.
I had McDonald's.
I had rye toast with some avocado. Some
wait, what's
sauteed
so
greens.
It's very LA.
It's just very LA. Yeah. I don't eat eggs. I've never had an egg in my life.
Really?
Never in my life. Not scrambled. Not omeletted. Not. I have had a bite of frittata. That's it.
How
did you quiche? That?
Never. No. A bite of quiche. That's it. But I don't. Yeah. So breakfast is a hard thing for me.
Why do you don't like yellow potato salad?
Why?
Well, because
the egg in it.
Well, the eggs don't make it yellow.
Yeah. It's the mustard.
Amir's not blackety black.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm not. Sorry.
He's bougie.
Yeah. I know.
Bougie as fuck.
I'm sorry, but this is the thing. Yes. Can you be like, if you're truly a foodie, you don't want your potato salad all that yellow.
I don't know what you're saying, Tess.
There is a limit.
I mean, there's a limit to the yellow, but you better equal it out with some relish. You know what I'm saying? Like,
ooh.
Oh. Hello? Uh oh.
I want to see if we can do a whole 90-minute episode based on potato salad.
I feel like I'm walking into dangerous territory, but I would prefer celery.
Oh, I love you so much. This episode's going to be super lit.
Thinly sliced, but I don't know.
Do you cook?
I like the crunch.
Okay.
The crunch? Okay.
Why don't they put cucumber in stuff instead of celery?
See, now you're pushing it.
I hate celery.
Okay.
I don't think it serves a purpose.
It's the crunch.
It's the crunch, put some other crunchy shit in there that don't taste like shit.
Celery doesn't taste like anything.
Wait, is your publicist losing your mind? Her mind right now?
I don't know. You know what? Speaking of publicists, though, I've always thought, don't you feel like sometimes when food has a moment, like certain, that it has a publicist?
Yeah.
Like acai or like when shit, like, remember when pomegranate or like kale? I'm like, what the fuck is
pistachios? Like, who's that?
Pistachios was the hot shit. And also, who's the publicist for romaine? Because romaine right now, can I eat it? Is it safe?
No, I don't know. They need to talk to the publicist for kale because kale was killing it.
I know. Kale's.
They was acting like it was new.
Beyonce kale's not that culturally relevant right now.
But it was. And my grandmother was like, what are y'all talking about?
Wait, we don't care for kale?
We've been caping for kale, but we weren't calling it kale. It was just greens.
Oh.
What are you promoting right now?
Well, all right, let's get back to
Valkyrie
it.
Make it to just can I just ask Valkyrie questions as you asked a Valkyrie question?
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to know, and you probably can't really answer this question. Well, first of all, how did you feel about Valkyrie not being in the Avengers movie? And then isn't she going to be in the second one? Because it seems like they might need some help.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was cool with not, you know, I was doing other stuff. Yeah. I was happy. She lives. That's
Have
that's
you heard
cool.
any word that she's going to be assisting? Okay, never mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if y'all seen the Avengers.
Yes.
Okay.
I've seen it.
They're going to need some help. So.
I still haven't seen Black Panther either, so I'm bad.
Would you say Black Panther?
No.
Huh?
I haven't seen Black Panther. I'm the only black person in the world that has not seen Black Panther yet.
Wait, why?
Because I was busy.
Doing what?
Well, yeah, the headaches and stuff. I get it. Mm. But just...
It's still out.
It's on DVD now, or Blu-ray.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
I did not know this. Yeah.
How does it? It's funny because I was thinking since it was kind of, well, Valkyrie was before Black Panther, but as a person in the Marvel scope of things, how did that feel?
Like just that Black Panther was existing
In your Marvel world, because that's, you know.
Man, exciting. Also, just because like Ryan is involved and Michael B. So, and Chad, who's a friend of mine, the film is, I think, so incredible. And I think sometimes it's a tricky thing when you do these big movies. You're like, there's this sometimes implication inside of the industry that like you have visibility, but in some way you've like sold out or you're diminished in some way. And it just felt like it's so cool to see Black Panther mean so much culturally and like push boundaries and open doors and be a big old movie like that. It sort of legitimized why you do movies that occupy that space, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like it helped people look forward to Valkyrie too, because...
Mm-hmm.
Any truth to the rumor that they might consider your demand for an all-female kind of...
You know, the thing is, it's been spoken about so much in the press that, and I've asked Kevin Feige, I'm like, do you feel trolled by me? Like, are we cool? And he's like, we're cool. I think.
How did you post it to him, or did you just post it?
No, I like we asked him. So it was, we were at this Marvel like 10-year anniversary photo shoot thing, and it was like a circle of just women talking, and we were like, "Oh, this would be so cool! Like, I wish we could do a film together." And then I was like, "Well, why don't we just ask him?" So we went up to him and we're like, "We should do this. Shouldn't we do this?" And then the best part about
sure.
Yeah, that's exactly like literally. Yeah,
I would at least think that, at least for today, that. Even if not for the reasons why they should do it,
mm-hmm.
but they could see that this is would be such a monumental moment.
Yeah, and also that it's commercially viable. I think that's the other
or
thing.
Are they like, still like being controlled by like the sexist troll?
No, stand? I don't think so. I think it's that their thing is like super well crafted, and they have ideas in terms of every phase. They just have mapping, and they have a. They have ideas about timing and rollout, and you
that
know,
would have to be like five
it's,
movies.
It's really
later.
Masterful, yeah. So it's. Yeah. I don't think it's that, and they also want to feel like they're never. You know, they have such a incredible relationship with fans, but they don't like the idea that they're ever pandering to fans, mm-hmm. and so if they make a film, they want to make it because they really believe in it, and it makes sense in terms of the scope of the whole universe.
It's just a matter of somebody coming up with the right story.
Yeah, I think so. And also in terms of like, I think they're always trying to find cool crossover, and that's happening anyways with mm-hmm. Captain Marvel, and like, you know.
Yes, that's what that was.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Ah. Were you into the Marvel Universe as a kid?
No, not at all.
Not until
so how do you, did you feel as though you had to like, okay, I got to do my homework and
yeah,
satisfy these fanboys.
Kind of, yeah, because I didn't really know anything about it. And then also because, like you said, it really was not written for someone like me. So it was, you know, really, you know. So I felt like I really had to understand the character and the world.
What was the, because of the what appeared to be the physical grueling process of the film as far as your action scenes and stuff, like, how much physical preparation did you have to do?
A lot, which was tricky because I was making Annihilation. I made Annihilation, and then I wrapped that, and like 3 days later, I was in Australia making Thor. So it was hard to balance those, but I had to learn like sword work and fighting, and I'd never done any of that stuff before. And then also just like put on a lot of muscle mass.
Yeah, you were
wait,
you had
ripped. To gain weight,
she
you said?
Ripped. Yeah, I gained like 15 pounds of just like muscle.
See, I thought it was computer grab. I mean,
you thought what? No, that's legit me, man.
Okay, I'm impressed.
Yeah, I really had muscles, and okay. I was strong. Uh-huh. I could do a bunch of pull-ups.
Don't it cost more money to put the muscles on you, you know, through video than to actually just put the muscles on?
Yeah, but sometimes you just, they, I mean, they VFX those whole movies, so. But no, I really did. I worked really hard.
Forgive me.
And I ate a lot of stuff.
Potato salad.
No.
I try to bring it back to
protein. We can move past. We have other things to talk
but
about.
But Tessa, this is what I want to ask you, because the more and more you get into these commercial roles, like, you know, the Marvel, the Westworld, you are, of course, a big activist, period. I won't just even just say with the women's movement. Have you felt somebody trying to kind of put the clasp on you yet, because you are... Now you're this major commercial actress in a way.
You mean in terms of how I use my voice or what
yes,
I say?
Yes. It's...
No, I think I've just had like a couple of experiences where I'm like, is social media the best place to do that? And I think we're also in this space right now of like internet activism, and it's not enough. And I think the experience of really like some of my experiences with Time's Up and actually like organizing and doing the work is just more powerful than talking about what you're doing sometimes. And
you've been auditing people. I appreciate that. Letting people know who is really about the
but
movement.
Now I'm just mostly, I just want to talk about goats because it's like a safer space. It's just a safer space.
So we
space.
Are
but
in
I don't
the
think
safer
you caught
space
that much.
Then.
I mean, I don't think you caught that much flack because a lot of people agreed with pretty much everything that you've been saying.
Yeah.
And it made me follow you more, to be honest.
Oh, really? Well.
Yeah. Just in between that and the Essence speech, I was like, oh, I got to go back and get me some Tessa Thompson.
But see, that's
life.
The other thing in terms of the Essence speech. Like, it's like those are conversations I want to have and I'm available to. Like, colorism in this industry is real and it's like has benefited me, obviously, immensely. And because of that, I feel like a responsibility to acknowledge it and to have nuanced conversations about it. And I do that privately inside of my space. I there's certain roles I don't take. There's certain things I won't do because of that. But I think engaging in a more public conversation is something I'm willing to do. I think it's just hard. In terms of like also. It frustrates me that like what journalism has become, that you could look on someone's Instagram and take something they say in a comment and write an article about it. Like it feels unfair. And I'm newly sort of navigating what it is to be a public figure in that way. And
I think most people are.
Yeah. All of us. Right. But we just live in public in a new way, and it's not something that I'm particularly interested in. I'm not fond of it, and I'm not good at it. Like I'm gonna say what I'm gonna say.
I'm scared of that. Yeah.
I'm petrified by it. So it make me want to take like a step back and just retreat goats.
It makes you like retreat as you're about to post something and you're like, well, should I? I don't. That feeling of even that is uncomfortable.
Yeah, but I feel really like Disney, Marvel, like I've been astonished. Like no one's like, hey, like, you know,
we need you to shut the fuck
up. No.
Okay.
Sorry. Hey, man. No, this is the way she said it. How'd she say it, Bill?
Let's do it again.
You need to shut the fuck up.
I need you to shut the fuck up. He asked, you said at the end of that speech, I'm sorry, since I'm in the speech because I took notes and everything. You said at the end of the speech, the Essence speech, that you were hoping that you guys could have follow-up meetings to that and whatnot.
Yeah.
How has that been going with the sisters?
It's been good with the sisters. So, one thing that's exciting to report is probably, so in terms of the structure of Time's Up, there are kind of spokes, there are subgroups, and I would say one of the most like vibrant, active and engaged subgroup within Time's Up is called Woke, Women of Color.
Shut up.
Yeah. And it's lit. It's like, it's just very like robust and real. And I think there's a lot, there's just a real acknowledgement that without that, that we're such an important piece. And historically, I think feminism too often has sort of ignored the voices of women of color and hasn't been inclusive.
Don't even know it. That's funny, and Tessa, because I have to tell people all the time, I used to hate when the Hillary Swank trailer would come on for her women's rights movie or whatever, and then it would come on right before like the Housewives of Atlanta, and I'd be like, so do these white ladies know that we can vote for another like almost 70 years?
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah.
How easy was it to navigate your way in the Hollywood women's movement? You guys gathered in almost in the hundreds. I know that.
Yeah.
You guys were, but how hard was it to one explain to people that weren't aware of the different levels of obstacles that
we face?
Yeah, exactly. Because I know in the beginning it was sort of like, kind of kumbaya-ish, but then,
then it was like, hold up.
I talked to, you know, people out of the chat, and they were like, yo, we got to explain to this one and that.
Yeah, it's...
And there were some that meant well.
Yeah, for some there's a steep learning curve. I mean, real talk, like there are certain rooms that I was absolutely invited into because of what I look like, in the sense
tokenism.
Of like... Yeah.
And safe. Right?
Kinda. Did you like call it out?
They think
like,
it's safe.
This feels like tokenism or?
Yeah, well, I was really lucky, like in some instances that someone else called it out for me, like being in a room and Jane Fonda being like, this is unacceptable, like there just has to be more. And then there started to just be a conversation around like, who's not in the room and why? And then also like, once you're in the room, like once you have a seat at the table, are you really, is your voice like legit heard? Because a part of that when everyone is included is like it just gets harder actually to do the work. It doesn't get easier because everyone is coming from a different point of view, you know, and so you have to really like, you're going to be at the table longer probably when everyone is invited. I called it out, but I think there was a real cognizance, you know, a cognizance. And I probably have like, I don't have a ton of I don't know.
What's clout?
Clout? No, bad. Yeah, and bad. And I have less to lose, I guess. You know what I mean?
On the subject of the woman thing, it's interesting. I asked Rosario Dawson the same thing because even there are color tiers and there's also like subgenres of this industry. Like earlier, we were just talking about how a certain company just pulled all R. Kelly music.
Yeah.
And I said to Rosario, I said, you know, when you guys finish with the movie industry, you know, this music thing is a whole nother animal.
Yeah.
I mean, so is the fashion thing when you really think about it. Like it's a whole nother animal. It's more ground, street.
I know.
So how do you guys feel about it? And I guess you would know that as well because even in Janelle is involved as well.
Yeah.
But it still feels like on a movie, TV type situation.
Yeah, it is. And Janelle, she was saying this because we had a meeting and she was saying like, it's tough in the music industry because there isn't the same sort of like enemy to rally around that there was in Harvey Weinstein. There isn't this like public enemy number one that you sort of take down. And in some ways, I think that that makes sense, that it doesn't gestate the same kind of like intensity. But it also felt like a problematic thing in terms of the Harvey conversation because people don't want to acknowledge then that like there's a systemic issue. Mm-hmm. Like when you talk about, you know, a gross abuse of power, you have to also acknowledge just like the imbalance of power, which is just as gross, you know, and victimizing. And that is like much harder in some ways to take down than a Harvey.
On the subject of the R. Kelly thing, it's hard too, because like we were saying, he touches so many things. There are so many other artists he's written for, produced. Like, it's like, how far as women do we, for lack of a better term, take these dudes down? Because there's so much. And yeah.
And it's also not just these dudes. It's also just like this thing. System. Yeah, and the there system. Are also enablers like women that support that system. It's not just men, you know?
Too. Yeah, because women, a lot of women have profited.
So I know you're saying for profit, but do they support it or is it just a thing of like, I can't fight it, so I might as well roll with it? Enabling.
It depends
still.
On a woman, don't you think? Like there are certain women so if you're who aware have benefited of it, and you're through still- the system.
Yeah, there's this really rad woman that works with Time's Up, but worked with the Annenberg. Her name is Stacey Smith, and she talks about women that support the patriarchy. This is so nerdy, but she says that they have high social dominance, which means that you have like a vested interest in protecting a system that empowers you,
like the overseer.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So sometimes people will say, like, particularly these conversations about, like, just hire more women. It's like, but what kind of woman are you hiring? Because just hiring a woman isn't enough.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. 'Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? No, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Being as though you haven't had designs on acting younger, mm-hmm. and you just, quote, wound up in it. And I'm certain that you didn't think, like, early in your acting career, like, doing the Veronica Mars days or whatever, that you'd be doing all this social activism and
stuff. I don't know if that's true, though. I think that was the thing for me where I was like, I don't know if I want to be in the pursuit of something I admire. I don't admire. Like, I think I've always wanted to be involved in activism in some way. And even when I look back, I didn't realize it at the time, but when I look back at Veronica Mars, that character, you know, like, there, she would say lines like, you know, someone said, why are you standing around here stalking? And she would say, what, you mean standing while black? Like, even that character wanted to sort of subvert ideas of, like, the sassy friend on a television show. Or, like, the very first part I ever played was an episode of Cold Case where I play a queer woman in 1930, you know, who can't live with her partner because that wasn't available to her at the time. So I feel like the things that have always compelled me have lived in that space.
By design or subconsciously?
By design or by kismet or I don't know.
All right. Well, as far as your work, I definitely want to talk about how did you prepare for your role as Diane Nash in Selma?
Well, I got really lucky in the sense of, you know, a lot of the leaders that were still around and available to talk to us did, and then I read tons. I couldn't meet Diane before we made the film. There were some complications around that. It's complicated, I think, when you're telling a story about people that lived during that time, and you also want to have a balance of being able to take artistic license and tell the story that you need to tell, and so biographies
are a little harder to do if the person's
living. They're hard to do. But Diane, after seeing the movie, was super happy with it. She told a really funny story that they did ask her in terms of who she liked, and she just like, I just want someone cute, which was, she's just being funny. But I went to Chicago where she grew up and you know, sort of traced her steps and talked to a lot of people that knew her and you know, found as much as I could about her.
Speaking of prep work.
Mm-hmm.
Cheese sticks.
Yeah.
Wait. Wait. Can I just say you?
I'm claiming credit.
Wait, but Selma, just wanted to ask you mm-hmm. because I know you're going to Creed. Was that your heaven? Being with Ava, being with, you know, being telling that story, those actors, that cast,
yeah,
Oprah.
I really hope the answer is yes, because if the answer is no,
I know.
Laya's she'll be like,
it's not the end of her world.
No, it won't be the end of my world. Just
but you
guys
see
Laya
is like body language. Like, yeah. she's
in the sense of who we imagine Tessa is. In my head, I was like, she was happy.
I was happy, but it was funny because we had a lot of conversations with the cast. Like, we would talk about, like, what part do you want to play? And so often it would be like a character that's existed, like, so-and-so wants to play Lena Horne, and so-and-so wants to play James Baldwin, and that's great, and I have a list of people that I'd love to play. But I also am like, what about just playing a fictional character that's iconic? And so that's my heaven, too, like, to get to play something that isn't real.
Do you screenwrite? Like, do you have aspirations of...
Yeah, I've been writing a little bit, something I kind of want to do. I was talking to Greta Gerwig. I sat next to her at the Met Ball, and we were talking a lot about writing. She has such, like, incredible things to say. Sometimes you have this idea that you just, like, you have to wait for some lightning bolt, and the truth is it's just, like, work and diligence and sitting down and, like, committing to write something and be bad at it for a while and then get better.
I love her approach to, like, I'm a big fan of her.
Me too.
The mumblecore.
Me.
Were you ever a part of that?
No, so this is the thing. I really wanted to be. So I went through this period where I was like, I'm going to make a mumblecore movie. Like, that none of them have existed for us except for Medicine for Melancholy, which was my introduction, of course, to Barry Jenkins.
It's a movement. Greta Gerwig, who she directed, she was up for a director this year. And,
for the girl.
For Lady Bird.
But she did Frances Ha and everything. It's weird now because it's sort of like, she's the commercial darling and the newbie in the commercial world.
But she's been around forever.
She's been.
I've seen her face before.
Mumblecore. I mean, I guess you could say it's a brand of. Is it Brooklyn?
It's sort of like 20 somethings. Oftentimes the film takes place in a very short swath of time where, like, nothing happens, but everything happens. I think it got the word mumblecore. Sometimes non-actors are in it because the sound design sometimes wasn't good. So that's sort of how. But there's a whole.
It's mostly like dialogue more than plot.
Exactly.
It's. I would say that. No. It's our. It would be the American version of Dogma 95, where Dogma 95 was like. There was a film challenge of, okay, a bunch of Danish filmmakers said that, okay, we're going to make film with natural light, no soundtracks. It's almost like a bunch of students or knowledgeable filmmakers challenging themselves.
Filmmakers.
You bring out the three-year-old in me. Stop, okay?
Meanwhile, I'm like, you're not talking about that Dogma that Kevin did.
It's a really interesting genre where...
Matt Damon, that's not what you're talking about.
No, I'm not talking about Dogma the movie.
Okay.
Yeah. Dogma 95 was
Lars von Trier, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like a movement in the 90s of filmmakers challenging themselves to these restrictive ways of making film as a way of the equivalent of walking on top of Empire State Building drunk on with your eyes closed, blindfolded.
But see, the interesting thing, so the genre is really, I mean, apart from Barry Jenkins' Medicine for Melancholy, it's all white filmmakers. And I remember, like, this was before I really knew about, like, Charles Burnett. Like, and you look at his film and you're like, he was doing the very same thing but doesn't get credit. And I mean, his not mumblecore, but just, like, being like, I'm going to make a film with what I have available to me.
Right.
You know, and use non-actors and tell a story that's contained that I can do and make beautiful images and not have it be plot-driven. But, yeah, there was a period when I was really, like, Do I need to make a movie? Also, because I was playing parts where I was like, I was stuck in this period of working on television and really dissatisfied. And so I first found Greta in that time. And so to see her, to see what she's done now, to see it enter this space where she's being acknowledged, it's just so cool. It takes a while.
I see that for you.
Thanks.
Not that I'm trying to, you know, push my vision off.
Plus, my dad will love you for it because he's like, anytime I get new stuff, he's just like, cool, cool. When are you going to write? When are you going to make a movie?
Now you know you have a producer here that will give you the money for it.
No, please.
Okay.
You know how much,
When it's a movie. You always need more money.
Yeah, Tessa, true.
Don't you always need more
One
money?
Day I'll be on at her door like, yeah, tell her Amir Thompson.
That's today, but
Amir,
yeah, I hear you.
From the Tonight Show?
That's like... Like Westworld,
just say,
Marvel
use,
movies.
Use Questlove. Like maybe she'll. No, I'm trying to inch for a hint towards a job here. Okay, Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Now, no. This is not what the question that you think it is.
Okay.
But when you told me that you were going to start researching your role for, I'm about to say Rocky.
Creed.
For Creed.
Rocky 8.
Wacky.
Yeah,
for
Wacky. Wait.
But I remember distinctively telling you.
Yeah.
What you shouldn't do.
You did.
Like, because.
But you were also.
I felt
do you remember
protective.
You were concerned for my well being, my safety?
Yes.
Yeah. Why?
He didn't want me on Broad and Erie. Like, she out did, in these
were
streets.
You on Broad and Erie?
Dude, yeah, she definitely. Did the very things that I told her not
yes,
to do.
Sassy, yes,
I went straight there.
You went to North Philly?
Yeah.
She went to Max's.
Oh, you got you a cheesesteak?
Yeah.
Yes. That's not even my favorite place, but that's good. That's
what's your favorite place?
Max's two times.
Yeah.
But I'm just
oh,
saying.
Oh, yes, I know. You still have this Max's beef.
What happened with Max?
Oh, fuck them.
They didn't give you a free one.
They don't know who, not that.
In Philly, you know they don't be knowing you.
Here's the deal. No, you're right. You're right.
It's true.
You're right. Yeah. But here's the thing, though. Like, if you're going to treat me like an asshole, be consistent about it. Like, I want you to be consistent about it. But don't 3 seconds later find out I am who I am. And then you start chasing my car down the block like, ooh. Bro, wait, we didn't know.
Shit. They chased you down the street?
Yeah.
I have always listed them whenever any international Ooh. Magazine asks me, like, name your cheesesteaks, and da-da-da-da-da, they are number one.
They salty.
Yeah. And
Word
I even...
You salty enough.
So when she said, like, you know... Where
That's
the,
why I go to Ishka Bibbles.
Larry's.
You're Ishka Bibbles? Really?
I'm chicken cheesesteak.
No, so. I'm chicken cheesesteak too.
So yeah, as far as chicken cheesesteak, Ishka Bibbles got it.
Okay, well, I mean, I'll give Ishka Bibbles...
Do you know what I am now? I'm mushroom cheesesteak. Or seitan cheesesteak.
Oh. Well, there are
there's
Govinda's.
Govinda's. Hip City Veg.
Oh, I haven't been there yet.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, I'm about that life. Because I'm LA now, so I'm with you. Yes, I'm Impossible Burger. Like, I'm with you.
Oh, my God. I'm in love the Impossible Burger. Oh, my goodness.
Thank you, Amir.
I've also never had a hamburger in my life.
Really?
A turkey burger?
I've had a turkey burger.
Don't get your black
heart. Oh, no. That's not fair.
That is not fair.
I'm playing. Well, I was just saying that me telling you what spots to avoid in Philadelphia to research your roles, you did the exact opposite. What made you do that?
Because I was like, then that's some real Philly shit.
Yeah.
You're trying to prevent me because you don't think I'm ready.
So when you went to Chicago, you went to Cabrini Green?
No.
Oh. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But it's Decree was a different movie, right? Like, it was a different type.
It was, yeah.
I'm just saying that, you know.
Did you talk to any Philly girls?
Would you go to 8th and Butler?
Damn.
To be
honest with you, I don't think I've been to 8th and Butler.
Yeah, but you know about 8th and Butler.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, like, I would be like, yo, you know, this spot's cool. You might not want to go to 8th and Butler.
But you know,
nobody's
fucking with Tessa Thompson. Like, at the end of the day, I don't think so. I don't think nobody fucking with you.
Really? Yeah. I don't know. I think so.
Okay, you did it already, so congratulations.
And now you're doing it again, right? Because you're in Philly as we speak, doing another Creed. Yeah.
I was at Max's the week before last.
Are you and Ryan back together too? Is he back in Creed too?
No, a new filmmaker named Stephen Caple Jr., a really dope dude, made this film called The Land that was at Sundance.
Sorry, I'm laughing at Amir's face.
No, I just don't like messing with any formula that's not broken. So I didn't know that Ryan wasn't doing Creed 2.
He's not.
Okay.
It'll still be great.
It's going to be great. Stephen Caple Jr. is a great filmmaker.
You don't have to.
Oh, I was saying that for the people. I mean,
is Rocky in it?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
What is a two actors I want to ask you that you work with that first of all, Jeffrey Wright and Lakeith Stanfield. Mm-hmm. I just have to know, how is it acting opposite of those two men?
Are you thirsty?
No.
Yes,
well,
she is.
When it comes to hold up. I'm not thirsty on Jeffrey Wright. I just think Jeffrey Wright is everything as far as an actor to me. He's everything.
You're talent thirsty.
No, I'm not. Hold up. Now, I'm Lakeith thirsty because he is one of the only black male actors that I know that prophesizes about the black woman. So in that sense, yes, I am in love with Lakeith Stanfield.
Yeah.
But I get some on the regular, so I'm not really chasing. But I'm curious, as an actress, what's it like with Jeffrey Wright?
I mean, he's so good. Like, he's so good. And he's like, it's sort of like not a master class, but he's just really, really, really good. That's all I can say. It's like a pleasure to watch him.
Have you ever been intimidated by a fellow actor that has such a pedigree or such a level of acting or effortless?
Ed Harris. He scared me.
Wow.
I was scared.
He's intense.
I was a little scared to work with him.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was a little scared, not gonna lie.
Is it in terms of I must deliver this perfectly, or?
He just scared, like, so I went to the Sundance Labs one year and I workshopped this film that I just came out at Tribeca, this film called Little Woods. Mm-hmm. And Ed Harris was the acting advisor, which would mean you'd be shooting these scenes and the acting advisor comes in to see how things are going and gives tips, and he just doesn't mince words. So I was like playing the scene. I had this idea that this character had, you know, really sort of stiff spine, and anyways, I had this idea, and he came in and I could just hear him at the monitor like stiff, stiff, and he came over to like give me a note. He's just like, he just says what he feels, and he's so impulsive, and he's so gifted. And then the first day that I came to work with him on Westworld, he just said to me, I voted for you, by the way. Like, he like liked my work in Creed, and that made me so proud, but also like just intimidated me, because I was like, oh God, I have to like be good today. But he's so good. I'm such a fan.
And Lakeith, can you tell the people how close he is to this character in Atlanta in real life? Because I know a lot of people really think that in Atlanta he's not acting. But as far as Sorry to Bother You,
yeah,
he is an actor. So
he's
it's like,
an actor. He's so gifted. I mean, I think he brings a lot of himself to Darius, and I think he ad-libs and stuff. But you know who is nothing like his character that I think people assume is Brian, who plays Paperboy.
Oh, yeah, I've met Brian.
He's like a that's a whole different.
I love him.
human. Like, he's a shapeshifter. And not that Lakeith isn't, but Brian really, like, it's night and day.
We saw it on This Is Us, too. Yeah, because Brian did This Is Us.
Oh, he did? Yes, I haven't seen that episode yet. Yes. I'm still in the first season. Grandpa's by. I live for that. I was like, yes, got by Grandpa.
So he's one of Grandpa's old friends. You'll see. It's really good. Yes, from the past.
Wait, spoiler.
That is actually season two, and y'all are just late. Okay. We're in season three of This Is Us.
No, I'm just like...
Oh my God. It would have been a spoiler if we didn't live in a binge watch world.
Let's just... Okay.
It was like a two season. You gotta. This is us.
I wasn't planning on watching the show. It's too emotional for me.
I watch it. Yeah, you would love it. And I think it would help you.
I think it would help you too.
Why?
I think because it started right around the same time my father died.
That's what I'm saying. It would help you process it.
This is the thing. The show is earnest, and I like that. You don't think it's earnest? It's human.
I actually believe it. I don't believe it's earnest. Like, Ernest tries.
Oh.
And Ernest means well, but Ernest, maybe a ground rule double, never home run. But I feel.
That's your def. Huh?
That's your def, yeah. I don't know about your def.
Yeah, your definition is different.
Oh, definition.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I think Ernest means well, but.
Heartfelt? Are they synonymous?
I believe in This Is Us.
Like, I believe in This Is Us too.
Me too. I believe it's real. It evokes emotion.
Because there's some earnest things that I roll at, like, oh, boy.
And it's real-life conversation. And some of these conversations we're not having, but we should. Like, the fact that the white daddy went and got the training to raise the black boy. And, oh, my God, it was, they're just more, I think they're too progressive. They're progressive at times. It's like, oh, some people aren't ready for this.
It heartens me, though, that because it's a very successful show. And I'm like, that's cool that America is into that right now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Legit.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I can be, I don't watch a lot of like television, like network television, but I watched that and I was like, all right.
I was shocked because when I happened to be at the Upfronts. Upfronts is basically, in the shortest way possible, it's sort of a convention for advertisers, and they come to see which shows they're going to invest in. So all these networks put together these little workshops, like NBC will rent out Radio City Hall for maybe 2 days, and the president will come in, and then J-Lo will come in with the Thursday night lineup, and Jimmy Fallon will come in and do some comedy, and you're basically watching day after day. Monday night, our lineup will be and The Voice, and as an advertiser, you're like, okay, I want my product on The Voice and this particular show, and I think I like this. And they introduce what the new shows are going to be.
I swear, I actually, until this moment, did not know what the Upfronts were. Like, I have participated, but I didn't realize it was for advertisers.
Hell yeah.
Thanks for that.
Anytime you watch TV and you see commercials.
Or product placement.
Product placement, yes. Upfronts are, they get in early. So, and sometimes it backfires. So think of when Michael J. Fox was returning to comedy with the Michael J. Fox show. Advertisers were excited, so they all lined up like, okay, this looks like it's going to be a ratings winner. And then they put all their money into the Michael J. Fox show, and then it busted after a year.
Right.
So that's sort of who infamously, I think Kevin Hart's show got dropped. He found out that his comedy on ABC, that his show got dropped right before he was supposed to go on stage.
Oh, that's awkward.
Yeah, so that's the downfall of Upfronts. Anyway, so at the Upfronts, I saw This Is Us and was sort of like, ooh, I don't know if this is going to work for NBC.
You don't know if This Is Us.
And then it worked.
It was us.
So can I ask, how did, knowing Boots Rally, Wally.
This is ridiculous already.
Okay. Knowing Boots Riley the way that I do, I'm extremely shocked at the amount of instant support that he had. I knew that he had a friend in Patton Oswalt and that he had a friend in David Cross.
Yeah.
And David told me how this project almost passed him by. Like, I think his assistant saw the script, read a little bit, and was like, yo, you really need to read this.
Yeah.
David was going to pass on it. Like, yeah, I got your script. I'm busy. And then the assistant was like, you got to do this shit. How were you all convinced? And I never knew that he had this level of talent in him.
I think this script was so singular, and he had been trying by hook or by crook to get it made any which way. Like, he made a record by the same title, Sorry to Bother You, to entice people to make the movie. He had such a clear vision, and he also has such chutzpah.
Yeah, it took chutzpah.
I like her.
It's all it takes. Little Yiddish.
Yeah, but it
like he really does. You know what I mean? Like, he's just like he's gutsy because he comes from a place of just like belief and yeah. That's sort of intoxicating to be around.
But from, and the truth from is, cynical Hollywood though, you just say like, oh, rapper for 20 years really didn't make it to the mainstream level. What does he have to offer me? Like,
but I think, don't you think we're in a time right now where like everybody's looking for the outlier to like bandwagon with? Cause
so how did it come? How did it come across your radar?
Well, funny enough, he wrote me a letter 2 years ago and offered it to me, and then essentially rescinded that offer by then asking me to audition for it, because in the space of 2 years, he felt like I like popped off too much to then be in his like crossed indie over. Movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so he asked me to audition, so I auditioned, and I wasn't in the same city as him or Lakeith, so we got on a Skype call, and then he felt like it was really instantaneous and he couldn't say no to me.
I don't even think that happens to any director. Like, it's,
what do you mean?
That's luck. I mean, on his end. But how do you feel? I feel as though this will be your,
the script
your real
is literally unlike anything I had ever seen or dreamt of. And then I also think in terms of like, I really love films like, you know, Being John Malkovich or Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind or like Michel Gondry's films. Like, I like, you know, weird shit. And I just felt like that was always a genre that wasn't going to be available to me because like, I don't see any black folks in those movies.
Like, I saw the trailer for Sorry to Bother You and I was like, I've been waiting for a black film like this for like 25 years.
Yeah, legit. Yeah. So that's how I felt like that when I got that scripted answer to call that, like, I just had literally been like, cool, I'll never get to make a film like that unless I make it. And I don't know that I will. And so it's like, yeah, that's how I felt.
Boots is our Spike Jonze. Yeah. Thank you, Jesus.
Thank you.
That is awesome. Yeah. Well, I know we have a gazillion more questions for you, we have to...
I really like being here, guys.
Can I also tell you that I love the magic? Whatever influence, I don't know if it is, but the power of you and Janelle together has opened up her in a way to her fans to watch an evolution that is just a gift.
Yeah, I'm really like, I'm so happy for her and so proud. Like, yes. I, like, outside of, you know, I just really love the record. Like, I listen to the record. It's weird sometimes when it's like someone that you're close to and your friend, you're like, I'm geeking out on your stuff, but I legitimately just like really love the record.
I do it to him all the time.
Yeah. It's kind of cool.
I used to do it to him all the time.
Yeah. So I feel that way about it. So I'm just like so proud because I just think it's like such a beautiful record and so dope. And then also just in terms of her evolution, she's in a space where she really like is allowing her work to be more personal.
Thank you.
That's like just setting herself free. Mm-hmm. But in doing that, you set a lot of other people free. So it's cool.
That's what's up. Well, thank you, Ms. Thompson. All right. Well, on behalf of Boss Bill, Unpaid Bill, Fontigolo, Sugar Steve, it's Aaliyah.
It's Aaliyah? Wow.
Come on, my R's and my L's, man. I'm paying for this. It's Laia. And Tessa Thompson. Thank God there's no R's or L's in your name. This is Questlove signing off for Questlove Supreme. We will see you on the next go-round. Thank
Questlove.
You. Bye.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. This classic episode was produced by the team at Pandora.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.